Good afternoon. Delighted to welcome you all to the courtroom. I want to especially welcome two high school groups whom we have with us. High school, would they please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. And we have Baraboo High School. Would those students please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. These students are here with a program cleverly entitled Court with Class. It's a national award-winning program, and we have had it from a number of years, and thousands of students have come. The program is an invitation to high school students and middle school students across the state. If the students agree to come, they're given materials about the case that they will listen to. And then at lunch hour, between the second and third cases in oral argument, the students meet with a justice who is assigned for that day to meet with students, and the discussion is relating to the procedures of a court in taking a case and deciding the case. The discussion is not on the substantive issues of the case. The students met with Justice Bradley, and Justice Bradley tells me that Deerfield High School, Ripon College Pre-Law Society, Loyal School District, and Baraboo High School did meet with Justice Bradley, but that Salaam was not there. Is that correct? And if the students from Salaam would like to meet with the justice and have the time after this hearing, we'll twist Justice Bradley's both arms and ask her if she would meet with the students. And so we can handle that after this oral argument. Does anyone need a summary of the case we're about to hear that will help you understand the oral argument? If you do, would you raise your hand and the deputy marshal will give you a summary. Good. Let me introduce the court to you all. I'm Shirley Abrahamson. I'm the Chief Justice. And to my immediate right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. The justice with whom you have met, students have met, and may meet again. To her right is Justice David Prosser, and to his right is Justice Annette Ziegler. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks. To his left, Justice Patience Rogensack, and on the far left, Justice Michael Gableman. With those introductions made, I will call our third case for today. 10AP 2762, Wisconsin Industrial Energy Group versus Public Service Commissioner. And I'm going to read the lineup of counsel to make sure we're correct. Arguing for 25 minutes is the is Kira Lohr. Is it Lohr or Lair? Lair. Of the Citizens Utility Board, representing Wisconsin Industrial Energy Group, Inc. Arguing for 20 minutes is Justin Chasko of the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin, the other respondents. Arguing 5 minutes is Michael Grievendinger. Grievendinger, thank you, counsel. Representing Wisconsin Power and Light Company, intervener respondents. 5 minutes, Joseph Orion Wilson of Quarles and Brady, representing Wisconsin Electric Power Company. And 5 minutes, Ms. Blair, for rebuttal. We agreed? Okay. Ms. Blair?
May it please the court. My name is Kira Lair, And I am arguing on behalf of the Citizens Utility Board of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Industrial Energy
Board. Ms. Lehrer, your voice is soft. I think you better raise the podium if you can figure that out. If not, we're going to help you. There's a button somewhere. Good. And then speak into that microphone.
Is this better?
Much.
Okay. Thank you. CUB represents the interests of residential, farm, and small business customers of public utilities in this state. And WEEG represents the interests of large industrial and manufacturing customers of those same utilities. Together, the two groups represent the interests of the majority of the ratepayers of public utilities in Wisconsin. Today, I'd like to talk about two things. First, it is to discuss the differences between the two statutes that are at issue in this proceeding, the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity, or CPCN statute, and the Certificate of Authority, or CA statute. Second, I'd like to discuss how the rules of statutory interpretation lead to the conclusion that the CPCN statute must be applied to public utility construction of large electric generating facilities, regardless of where they're located. First, to the two statutes. In 1931, the legislature enacted the CA statute governing, among other things, public utility construction of new electric generating facilities. The provisions of the CA statute that are relevant to this proceeding have remained largely unchanged since its enactment more than 90 years ago. The CA statute identifies three criteria that the Commission can use in its discretion not to certify a project. Specifically, the law states that the Commission may refuse to certify a project if it appears that the project will substantially impair the efficiency of the service of the public utility, provide facilities unreasonably in excess of probable future requirements, or add to the cost of service without proportionally increasing the value or available quantity of service. That's it. The law requires no hearing, and the Commission's action and review and approval of an application for a CA are entirely discretionary. That means that even if the Commission finds that a project does impair the service of a utility or that its value does not exceed the available or that its cost exceeds the value or available quantity, it can still be approved if for other reasons the Commission chooses to approve the project. In 1975, the legislature decided that for some projects, the CA statute was not enough. So it created a new statute, the CPCN. Instead of identifying criteria the Commission can use not to certify a project, the CPCN statute identifies criteria the Commission must find in order to certify a project. For instance, the law only allows the Commission to approve a project if it determines that the project satisfies the reasonable needs of the public for an adequate supply of electric energy. In addition, the Commission must find that the design of the project is in the public interest, considering economic factors and alternative sources of supply. The CPCN statute also subsumes all three of the CA statute's criteria if and only if the application is by a public utility. It requires the Commission to find that a project complies with each of the three CA criteria before it can be approved. In addition to requiring these affirmative findings for approval, the CPCN statute goes a step further and mandates rejection or modification of a project if any of the criteria are not met. The law also has significant procedural requirements, mandating that the Commission ensure that a record is thoroughly developed by making a completeness determination at the outset and requiring a contested case hearing to be held. With respect to public utilities, the threshold criteria for application of the CPCN or the CA statute is the size of a project. The CPCN statute applies to projects sized at 100 megawatts or greater, and the CA statute applies to those that are less than that. This is the first time that a Wisconsin public utility has sought to build an electric generating facility 100 megawatts or larger outside of the state. As we noted in our initial brief, another utility has filed for and received a certificate of authority from the Commission for a 99-megawatt project, but Wisconsin Power and Light Company is the first to cross the 100-megawatt threshold. It is that...
Could I ask about that? That's the Iowa project?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there a deliberate effort to get lower than the 100 megawatts?
All I know for sure, Your Honor, is that the Wisconsin Public Service Corporation had a choice of the size of facility that it intended to construct, and the choice that it made was to construct 99 megawatts, which put it under the CPCN threshold.
I think your description of the two statutes is very important. But for me, this is more than sort of a policy discussion. In as much as this wind farm has already been constructed and is operating and has been operating for a year, what is the remedy that you're seeking in this case?
The remedy we are seeking is that this court uphold the circuit court's determination regarding de novo review, first off, and then that the court find that the commission erred by failing to apply the CPCN statute to Bent Tree. We recognize that the facility is constructed, and we are not looking to pull it out of the ground.
Well, suppose they did err. What's the remedy? It seems to me the remedy is you can't charge one remedy might be you can't charge Wisconsin consumers. Let the stockholders pay.
There's an element of fairness here, and that it was Wisconsin Power and Light Company that itself filed an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity. If you'll notice, we have the first page of their application at page 63 of our appendix, and the heading is Application for a Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity.
Counsel, I read in the briefs that they filed both ways, under a CA and under a CPCN. Is that wrong or right?
That was news to me because their application clearly specified only that it was for a CPCN. They do include a reference to the CA statute, as they must, because as a public utility, when you're complying with the CPCN statute, you also have to comply to the CA statute. But the words of their application were for a certificate of public convenience and necessity and other such authority as may be required. They did not speak in the alternative, as in it might be for a certificate of authority or it might be for a certificate of public convenience and necessity. They applied for a certificate of public convenience and necessity.
Well, so what's the remedy? Get a new hearing under the more stringent statute?
Because of the unique circumstances of this case in which the facility has already been constructed, and because...
Not only has it already been constructed, it services more than Wisconsin, doesn't it?
As a new electric generating facility that is theoretically connected to the region, it serves the region.
Which is more than Wisconsin.
That's correct. There are some issues with this project and its ability to connect throughout the region.
But theoretically, it can serve the whole, more than Wisconsin.
Yes.
All right. So you'd be affecting more than Wisconsin if we said you had to stop, right? Or tear it down.
Yes.
Okay. So you don't want it torn down?
No.
You want it to be used for fixing rates? Isn't that the whole point of this?
I'm sorry, for...
But isn't this the issue here, ultimately, of who's going to pay for this construction?
Wisconsin ratepayers are already paying for this construction.
Is that what you like?
We recognize that it is something that has occurred due to the time that has passed since this proceeding began. We also recognize that it is impossible to predict what would have happened if the commission had considered the case under the CPCN statute to begin with. But that situation is only going to continue to arise. It's going to happen every time this occurs.
Well, then is the remedy that nothing should be done about this particular case, but that we've got a situation that can arise in the future, and that you want a clarification of the law that if it is a structure that falls within the more stringent statute, that the Public Service Commission apply that statute. Is that what the point of this is?
We believe that there was harm in this proceeding. However, for all practical purposes, given the circumstances of where we are right now, we agree with the Court of Appeals that noted, that suggested that the court resolve the legal issue to avoid delays in legal battles over the next large project a public utility proposes
to construct. So it's a decision that would be applied in the future, but that your clients would get the satisfaction that they were correct, but nothing in money.
We are not looking for costs in this proceeding.
All right. You're not looking for costs, and you're not looking for a change in the rates.
That's correct.
You're looking for a rule that will be held in the future to bind the Public Service Commission.
That's correct.
Okay. Why, if the answer to the questions you're posing are not completely clear, why don't you go to the legislature and get completely clear answers?
I think that is something that can be explored. There's quite a few things I wish the legislature would do, actually, with respect to the regulation of public utilities. But in this situation, we have a law that exists on the books that on its face, given its plain meaning and its threshold requirement of 100 megawatts for large projects that are being constructed by public utilities, we want to ensure that that law, as it exists right now, is applied to future construction of project size that 100 megawatts or larger by public utilities.
What's the standard of review, Counselor, that we should apply to the PSC decision?
De novo review, Your Honor.
And why?
This is the first instance that this issue has occurred. That's evidenced both by the fact that Wisconsin Power and Light Company actually applied for a CPCN and by the fact that the commission issued a notice seeking comments from the interested parties and the impacted parties as to whether or not they should apply it any other way, and that no other facility of this size has been proposed to be constructed by a public utility outside of the state.
What if we were to determine that the utility filed under both the CA and the CPCN? And what's your answer to that question?
To the question regarding review?
Standard of review, which was a decision applying the CA.
Regardless of whether the utility filed under both statutes, it is the same that this is the first time this issue has come up.
It's the first time that a facility out of state has been built, or the first time a facility out of state has been built that falls within the CPCN?
The first time a facility that has been built, the latter.
Okay. So it does matter somewhat what they really filed under. I mean, just say they never filed under a CPCN, they filed under a CA. What would your answer be to the standard of review of the PSC decision?
That wouldn't change our argument at all. Because
you'd still say it was de novo.
Yes, because it is the first instance a project greater than 100 megawatts has been proposed outside of the state.
But isn't it just the CPCN that has the 100 megawatts as a criteria?
That's correct, but it would be the first instance in which the opportunity to examine that question could be reviewed. If they filed under a certificate of authority, we would have immediately challenged that. So this is the first instance of a plus 100 megawatt project being proposed. And you cannot ignore the CPCN statute.
Okay, but the CA statute doesn't have any megawatt statement in it, does it?
It does not identify anything with respect to size or location.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
Just to make sure I understand, for you, the idea of whether or not they filed under the CA along with the CPCN really only comes into play in your equitable argument. You understand and believe they filed only under the CPCN, and because of that, you feel it inequitable to to take them to task for the Public Service Commission proceeding under the CA.
Or essentially following the Commission's order, yes, mm-hmm. That's correct.
You talked about the CA statute being enacted in 1931 or 31 session. Isn't there authority in that statute to go beyond the bare minimums and look into other matters or demand additional information?
That authority exists in the Commission's broad authority to do all things reasonable and necessary in furtherance of its jurisdiction, but that's why the distinction between the CPCN statute and the CA statute is so important, because the legislature decided the Commission simply having the ability to do that was not enough. There are certain instances where the fact that the Commission could do something is not sufficient. The legislature wanted to ensure that the Commission would do those things. For instance, the hearing. The legislature wanted to ensure that there would be a contested case hearing held when a project of 100 megawatts or larger was being constructed by a public utility, and did not want to leave that to the discretion of the three commissioners.
Is it your position then that the legislature wanted everything in the, is it nine, the second one, that everything in that had to be done?
Everything that could be done should be done. Everything in the CPCN statute, including most importantly the ratepayer protection provisions, because these projects are expensive. This project alone was nearly $500 million, and Wisconsin ratepayers have to pay for that. So the legislature made clear, in those instances when Wisconsin ratepayers are going to be on the hook for the costs, the more stringent standards in the CPCN provision statute must apply. That's when the difference is crucial.
It seems to me under 49, the Public Service Commission can do more than that. You acknowledge that, whatever the authority is. Do I understand from your answer that if we were under 491, that the Commission wouldn't have to do everything that's mandated in the statute?
Oh, I'm sorry if I gave that impression. No, that was not the intent. The Commission would need to follow the criteria within the CPCN statute.
Well, but you said your answer, first answer, was something, everything that they could. I mean, would you really, is it a mandate to be dealing with local rules in Minnesota and taking into account, all of those things that would normally be taken into account if we had a Wisconsin project?
And that does get back to my original answer of what they are capable of doing within their jurisdiction.
Then they don't have to do it.
I'm sorry?
Then you're basically saying they don't have to do everything in 491.
They have to do everything by law they are allowed to do. So that is part of the problem in this proceeding. Is what the Commission and the utilities have identified are a handful of provisions that don't fit very well. But instead of taking a look at those handful provisions and deciding if there's another way to address them, or if in fact it is impossible to comply with them given the remainder of the Commission's jurisdiction, they want to throw out every single one of the criteria the legislature identified was important for projects sized at 100 megawatts or larger. They want to take all of the ratepayer protection criteria that the legislature identified only applies to public utilities and say, that doesn't matter. It's on the other side of the border. It's 20 feet on the other side of the Wisconsin border. Therefore, none of these provisions should apply. Don't hold a hearing. Don't develop a thorough record and make a completeness determination. Don't have mandatory criteria. Leave it entirely up to the discretion of the Commission, even though if the project were 20 feet on this side of the border, I would look at it entirely differently.
Well, the certification Is this a certification? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Yes. The certification indicates that it's not possible to comply with all, and I prefer the statutory numbers, 491, which is the toughest standard, right? Because it is 20 feet over the border. It doesn't matter if it's 20 feet or several miles. You can't comply with the statute because the statute is thinking about in this state. Because that's the usual, right?
I don't know that I would say that that's the usual.
No, I'm okay. More frequent than otherwise. So they can't comply with everything. And the commissioner who dissented initially and then concurred makes the argument that the commission did a heck of a lot to comply with 0.491, more than they had to do to comply with 0.49, right? So you can't ask more than that, can you? That is, that if it were a 491, the commission has to touch all the bases that jurisdictionally and practically it can touch, right?
That's right.
And that's what you want.
That's right.
All right. And did they do that in this case?
Not completely.
Not completely. What was left out?
The completeness determination, actually.
Why is that important?
That's at the outset of a case determining that there is a thorough and complete record for review to apply the mandatory criteria in the CPCN statute to. Moreover, I'm sorry.
That wasn't done here.
That was not done here.
How did that affect the proceeding?
That's something we'll never know.
Okay.
It would be pure speculation to guess. There were instances with respect to this project that came to light after the certificate of authority was approved that may or may not have had a difference if a completeness determination has been made. It's impossible to say. But it was something that was not complied with. More importantly, what's to happen the next time? So this commission applied some of the criteria in the CPCN statute that it didn't need to. It's also the case that it was one vote away from not holding a contested case hearing in this case.
Three commissioners, 2-1.
Exactly. As I noted, with respect to the rules of statutory interpretation, it simply makes more sense that the CPCN statute apply to large projects constructed by public utilities than the CA statute. It leads to absurd results, as the Court of Appeals noted, if projects that are otherwise identical, that otherwise cost exactly the same for Wisconsin ratepayers, get treated completely differently merely by being plopped on the other side of the border.
What's the public policy on the Public Service Commission?
As this court has repeatedly noted, the purpose of the public utility laws in this state are the protection of the consuming public.
Right. Is that stated anywhere in the law, or did the court make that up out of whole cloth?
I don't think it was out of whole cloth, but it was out of an examination of the entirety of the laws in the state and the application both by the commission and this court over the years that those laws are in existence for the protection of the consuming public.
And so you think that the public is more protected by doing a 0.491 than doing a 4.9?
Without question, Your Honor.
Why? It's very hard for me to understand that.
The procedural requirements in the CPCN statute are not just ministerial. Whether or not evidence gets to be provided by those who are interested in a proceeding and have a significant interest in the outcome of a proceeding is a material fact. It's why the legislature did insist that there be a difference. The legislature was aware that the commission had the authority to hold a hearing under the CA statute, and yet it mandated for these larger projects that a hearing must always be held. The same with respect to the mandatory criteria. As I noted earlier, the commission is able, under the CA statute, to determine that a project is going to be larger than a public utility needs. It's going to cost more than would be valuable for a, I see my light has come on.
May finish Thank your you. Sentence, Council.
For ratepayers to pay for, and because of some other reason, it could still choose to approve it. It has that discretion. It does not have that discretion under the CPCN.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Mr. Chasko, representing the PSC, you've got to 20 minutes.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Justin Chasko, and I represent the Public Service Commission. As the Chief Justice noted, I'll be arguing for 20 minutes on the issues of standard of review, statutory construction, and addressing the misconception that the CPCN law presents significant new ratepayer protections that are lost without the application to this case. To my immediate left is Mr. Joe Wilson, who represents Wisconsin Electric Power Company. He'll be speaking last about the issue of the Commerce Clause. And to his left is Attorney Michael Greiveldinger, representing the applicant, Wisconsin Power and Light, and he'll be talking about the implications of the fact that the CPCN law applies to all persons, not simply public utilities. And to be consistent, I'll use the same nomenclature used by appellants in referring to the two laws, the Certificate of Authority, or CA law, and the CPCN law. The Commission's application of the CA law to this project was correct. And that application, and that interpretation that the CPCN law does not apply provides more than adequate protections for the ratepayers of Wisconsin. On the other hand, accepting that the CPCN law not only applies to this project, but to any project built in the United States, violates the fundamental tenets of statutory construction, and in fact does not result in the maintenance of unique ratepayer protections that would be found nowhere else.
Council, is it your understanding that the application was filed under the CPCN law?
The application did ask for authority both under the CA law and the CPCN law. That is typical, and you can see that in the record at item 9, I believe. It is the first page in that record where Wisconsin Power and Light says authority under Wisconsin statute 196.49 and 196.491 and any other regulatory review that the Commission might require.
What do you do with the record that I have before me that indicates that, and I'm referring to the November 6, 2008 order, it's an interim order from the Public Service Commission, and it appears from the first couple of paragraphs that they're saying that the application was filed under 491, but we have now reviewed the application and listened to comments, and we're going to consider this as a CA application, not a CPCN application. What should I do with that? Because that sure seems to answer the question contrary to your answer.
First, I'm not sure what the implication of that statement might be, because the Commission applies the same ratepayer criteria to both projects. And when the Commission is saying that we're not going to apply the CPCN law to this case, we're simply saying we're not going to apply those provisions, which would be absurd for the Commission to try to apply out of state.
My question really goes to what was filed. What was the application? And it says here on the November 6, 2008 order, this interim order addresses the question of whether the Commission should review Wisconsin Power and Light Bentry Wind Project to be located in the state of Minnesota as a Certificate of Authority, CA, or as a Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity, PCCN, under 19.491, that Wisconsin Power and Light intends to construct its Bentry Wind Farm Project as a 200-megawatt facility, and it filed a CPCN application with the Commission.
In the notice of proceeding, however, the commission requested comments whether an out-of-state project such as this should be reviewed as a CA application or a CPN application. The commission set July 3, 2008 as the deadline for receiving comments. The commission accepted comments and legal analysis from numerous entities and deliberated on the issue. The commission concludes that it will review the Bentree Wind project as a CA, not a CPCN application. And number one in the record is the lengthy engineering plan, which is submitted in fulfillment of the application pursuant to 491. So what do you do with that order? I mean, what am I missing when I read that order that specifically indicates that the application was filed under CPCN, we've invited comment, and now we decide to review it under CA and not how it was filed? How do you do
that? First of all, I apologize. I'm not sure what the first page of the application would be in the record, but if you look at the first page, and perhaps Mr. Greiveldinger could identify that.
That would be helpful to me, because that order seems to contradict what you're saying.
But what I think the commission is saying, the commission is not saying that they did not file for both. The commission is saying they filed for a CPCN, and the important thing for the commission to decide is whether the CPCN applies, not to also say that the CA law does or does not apply, because it clearly does, and it's undisputed that it would apply in the absence of a CPCN.
It's certainly not dispositive of anything, necessarily, is what the applicant thought was the applicable law. But just like a lot of things, you know, it's indicia of something. And that's why I assume that it was asked earlier by another justice, and that's why I look at the record and see the order dated November 2008 that says although it's filed as a CPCN, we're going to review it as a CA. That suggests to me that the filing authority, by reviewing that order, thought that it was appropriately under CPCN. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what that order suggests to me.
I think the difficulty I'm having in answering your question is trying to understand what the importance of whether or not they ask for a certificate of authority is, because it is up to the commission. I believe it would be in the commission's discretion to accept an application that was titled the wrong thing. And I think you'll find that they did ask for both when you look at the application itself. And even if they hadn't, that the commission could treat an application as a certificate of authority application.
Well, assume my question is irrelevant, but what's the answer?
What did they apply for? I believe they applied for both the certificate.
And then where can you point me to inform my inquiry?
Apologize. Okay. In the PSC's record given to the circuit court, which I believe is item 9 in this court's record.
I have it right here. Well, look. In the, if I might, if you look at the blue brief, that's the Cub brief, at Appendix 19, the Public Service Commission issued an interim order. The interim order said that the issue before the commission for the interim order is whether it's a CA or CPCN. That's within the first four lines.
And it says, then that's the order I was referring to. They filed the CPCN.
Yeah. It says that they got comments. They did legal analyses from numerous entities. They deliberated at its open meeting. PSC has open deliberation meetings on cases. And the commission concludes, now this is their written order. Commission concludes it will review the project as a CA, not a CPCN, and Commissioner Azar dissents. So now then they have this whole thing that explains why they're going to do that. That was their interim order. So it's going to be a CA review, not a CPCN. Then, and then the Commissioner Azar dissents, that's at page 31, So they took this issue up, right? The commission took up the very issue.
Absolutely.
Made a decision, and then put into effect its decision, and then its final decision is at Appendix 41, right? Well, it appears from the commission's own documents that the issue before it was whether it should be CA or CPCN. Now, whether the power and light company asked for either CA or CPCN sort of makes you like them in the sense that, hey, they're trying to do the best they can. They file under the tougher one and the simpler one. This is as Ms. Laura said for representing the industrial energy group. They did the best they can. They got a decision. They went ahead with the decision. I mean, otherwise, what do they have to do? An interim appeal, all of that is timely, costly. Got a decision, and they went ahead. So now what's before us is whether their initial decision was right.
Correct. I think perhaps where the reason the court is asking about this certificate of authority and whether or not that was an application is related to the issue of deference. The commission has, in fact, declined to apply the CPCN law to a certificate or to an application for a transmission line that would have required a CPCN if it had been built entirely in the state of Wisconsin. That is in the record at item 27, Exhibit C to the commission's circuit court brief. So the commission, and that was in 1990, Wisconsin Electric Power Company proposed to build a transmission line that was big enough and long enough to require a CPCN. The commission did not require the company to.
So what's the point of telling us this? Does this go to the standard of our review?
Yes.
Okay. You want it, what, great deference?
In the circuit court, we argued for great deference, great weight deference.
What are you arguing here?
In our briefs before this court, we asked simply for for due weight deference.
Okay, and so let's all explain what due weight means.
Sure, due weight is simply, my understanding of due weight is simply if the court finds that both the parties have put forward reasonable interpretations of the law that are equally reasonable, that the commission's interpretation would prevail.
Yeah, I started asking the questions because I thought they were relevant to the standard of review, and I thought, well, if they applied for a CA, the PSC has done CAs a lot of times, so I would be more comfortable with deference. But then as counsel responded to my argument, it became apparent to me, something that wasn't apparent before I asked the question, that there's the initial question of which do you choose, and it's the which do you choose that you're stuck on, not whether you wrongly applied the CA if that was the right standard, correct?
But I would go even a step further and to say that the Commission's 80-year history in regulating public utility projects under the Certificate Authority Law, which applies to all projects that are constructed by Wisconsin Public Utilities, and the Commission's 35-year history of interpreting the CPCN law, the Commission is the sole agency charged with interpreting those statutes, that more than meets the requirements for due weight deference. The Commission has substantial and longstanding expertise in regulating public utilities and specifically their construction projects.
But the choice to which we're applying the significant standard of review is whether the PSC correctly chose to use the CA process or the CPCN process, correct?
That's not how I understand the requirements as expressed in Mercy Care.
Let me give you the alternative, because
sure.
Maybe I'm not being clear, and I wasn't clear in my own mind, so if I'm not clear with you, just keep after me so we communicate. There are two places you could apply the standard of review. The first is whether the PSC chose the correct process, okay, CA or CPCN. That's one choice. You could apply a standard of review to that choice. If you decide they correctly chose the CA standard of review, then you could apply Then you could apply a standard of review to whether they correctly employed the CA process, right?
Correct.
Okay. But I think we're really arguing about the first one, not the second. They're not claiming that if CA was correct, you did it wrong, are they?
They're no allegation that anything was done wrong, even if the CPCN law did apply, with the exception of the completeness determination, which, by the way, has nothing to do with the financial interests of the ratepayers. A completeness determination is to protect the commission so that the commission has all the information it needs to process an application, and that was clearly recognized in the Clean Wisconsin versus the PSC case.
Okay, but just so I'm clear, we get rid of this one issue. There's no allegation, you believe, and I'm sure opposing counsel will straighten me out if I'm goofed up, that the PSC did not correctly apply the CA process, if that is the correct process.
That's true. I've seen. Correct. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, counsel, could I ask you about this issue of remedy? If the other side were to win, they don't seem to be asking very much. I'm a little confused about that. What's your position?
Well, I think your confusion is certainly understandable because it's not clear what they want to have been done in this case. And it's also notable to the commission that they cite no CA application in which the commission has ever approved a significant construction project where the commission did not make these ratepayer findings, that the project was unneeded or unnecessary. But getting back to your question, what's the remedy? First, this court would have to decide whether or not a CPCN has actually been issued by operation of the law. The CPCN law says that whatever the commission does or doesn't do, 30 days later, an application is automatically deemed to be complete, and 180 days later, an application is automatically deemed granted. And so first, it is our position that if the CA law does not apply, you have no certificate of authority, and any conditions that are in that order would be gone, and that a CPCN would be granted simply by operation of the law. If that's not the case, and somehow this court can find, first I would note, I think it's up to the appellants to show that that's not the case, but if somehow that's not the case, the commission would need very detailed guidance from this court for how to apply the CPCN law, because it is not clear we could do anything different than we have. Whether or not this could be taken out of rates, I think is actually not the case. The standards for rate recovery are simply that something is used and useful and that it was a prudent investment, and I think that it's probably fair to say that if a Wisconsin utility relies on a permit issued by the commission, that the commission ends up giving the wrong permit, that the commission would not then say it was imprudent for you to rely on our application of the wrong law. So I don't know what the remedy might be.
Well, what if we said that this is a shock and surprise and we're in awe? This is the first time somebody's come to this court and hasn't asked for either an injunction or money, right? And they say, hey, we forgive you all. Might have made a mistake. We think you made a mistake. But the companies ought not to suffer. Maybe the decision would have been different and the rates would be lower. But what's done is done. But what we want is a clear understanding that from now on, the PSC is to adhere to the law as we understand it, which is a CPCN. What's the matter with that? Can you live with that? Can the PSC live with that?
If the court gives us, the commission is not comfortable with going through 15 to 20 new factors in the CPCN law that have nothing to do with Wisconsin ratepayers.
Hey,
but if the court is willing to do that, the commission could live with that result.
Okay. But so I don't have to go through the 15. I could just say the relevant ones. You figure out what's relevant. You know what relevant is. And aren't there any CNs that are not applicable because it's outstate?
I'm sorry, any CAs?
Any requirements under the CN or factors under CN that are not applicable because this is in Minnesota or for any other reason?
The CA law generally allows the commission to apply whatever criteria that the commission
needs. Applicable, right. Whatever are relevant for that particular construction.
And if I could, the reason that the court might go down this road and ignore all the absurdities and deal with them later and tell the commission that we need to interpret the law in a particular way is based on the false premise that the CPCN law, in fact, contains new ratepayer criteria that are not found anywhere else. Mm-hmm. What is discretionary on cost-effective factors is discretionary in the CPCN law as well. When the CPCN law incorporates those factors, it incorporates the words "the commission may." Mm-hmm. So it is not true that the commission has a different standard of review for cost effectiveness under one law than it does in the other. And I see
okay, so what if that's true? I accept that. You're not out anything then. If that's true, you're where you are. So you shouldn't care whether you're doing it under a CPCN or CA. You only apply the relevant factors under either, and you apply, if there's one that's more stringent than the other, you apply that. I mean, I don't understand why you're objecting to apply relevant criteria from CPCN.
We are absolutely not objecting to that. Okay. That's exactly what we did in this case.
Ah, but therefore you would not object to a ruling saying that's what you should do when you have a construction that fits the criteria, that is the 200 megawatt of the CPCN.
I see my time has expired.
Yeah. You may answer my question, please.
Again, the commission did not go down this route because it would require the commission to ignore some pretty significant absurdities in the law that the commission doesn't think should be ignored when you first interpret the law to decide whether or not it applies. For example, it would apply to a person building a power plant in the state of Hawaii.
Look, today, I think, I don't know enough. Can I build a plant in Hawaii and cover Wisconsin?
I'm sorry.
If I built a plant in Hawaii, can I deliver energy to Wisconsin? Pardon me?
No.
Okay, so that's absurd. When the 1931 law was passed, building it in Minnesota was pretty absurd to deliver to Wisconsin, or may have been absurd.
I don't think that's quite correct.
Okay.
In 1927.
The brief says that.
Right. In 1927, the more typical scenario would be a plant located just over the borders of Wisconsin rather than a plant built in South Dakota or Wyoming.
But now you can build it pretty far from the state border
right.
And still deliver to Wisconsin and deliver to many states, right?
Yes.
Okay. But not Hawaii at the moment. So we don't have to worry about Hawaii.
Well, to the commission, it's instructive that that's what the law would require on its face if you accept the...
Why would anyone come from Hawaii and come to the PSC in Wisconsin for permission when they're not going to deliver anything in Wisconsin?
I think all the parties agree nobody would ever actually follow the law, but it's not up to the law's requirement in that regard. But again,
okay.
Thank you for your time.
Well, I will go to Hawaii and check that out. All right.
It doesn't seem to me that far-fetched that a Wisconsin utility might develop something in Canada.
No. In fact, I think there's several hydropowered plants in Canada that Wisconsin utilities or utilities in America are attractive to. That's not far-fetched at all.
Well, let me ask this. When you're under 49, the commission is clearly empowered to do more than the minimum. Do you see that the commission, if it were under 491, could simply not do some of the mandatory obligations?
No, if they're mandatory, as the law says, then the commission would endeavor to do them, and that's the difficulty in this case. Is the Wisconsin Commission really the appropriate entity to say that an impact on a local water or recreational use is undue or not undue? And I'm sorry if I'm not quite answering your question.
In other words, you don't think you could just say, well, we can't do that. It's not practical.
Right? No, I don't think that. That's certainly not an approach we're comfortable with, that the commission, it's the legislature that writes the laws, not the commission. And it's important to note that these ratepayer protections are not just found in the CA law, but they are important protections that are built in all of Chapter 196 that the commission would be required to fulfill whatever certificate applies.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
Mr. Riedeldinger, representing Wisconsin Power and Light.
May it please the Court, I am Michael Riedeldinger, representing Wisconsin Power and Light Company. The Certificate of Authority Statute 4.9 applies narrowly to Wisconsin public utilities. In contrast, 4.9.1, the CPCN statute, applies broadly to persons. This is significant because if this Court is to find that the CPCN statute applies regardless of location, it would mean, as Attorney Chesko has indicated, it would apply to any person building a facility over 100 megawatts, regardless of location. This would mean a Michigan public utility building in the Upper Peninsula would have to come to the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin.
Does it deliver energy to Wisconsin?
I apologize. I couldn't hear you.
Does it deliver energy to Wisconsin consumers, or is that irrelevant to you?
It's relevant. It could deliver power. It's possible with the transmission system as it is today. Power travels across state lines all the time. But whether it is delivered would be irrelevant under the statute if it's applied outside the state. To put it another way, you could have Kohler Company headquartered in Wisconsin seeking to build a generating facility in Michigan to enter into the wholesale market and would still be subject. Yet the state doesn't have interest or an interest in regulating whether Kohler could build a facility outside of the state of Wisconsin. We know this because one state cannot directly legislate over persons and property in another state, and this Court has long recognized that principle, as shown in State X Rel Chandler versus Maine from 1863. Moreover, this principle informs a presumption in statutory interpretation that state statutes are presumed to have exclusively domestic application. This Court in 1927 actually utilized that presumption in E.L. Husting Company versus Coca-Cola, 1927 case, and said that a state statute is presumed to be for regulation and control of property or persons within such state. Read in light of this presumption, the CPCN statute makes perfect sense. The state legislature is interested in reviewing any project constructed by any entity, not just Wisconsin Public Utilities, in the state of Wisconsin over 100 megawatts. This is also demonstrated by the fact that the CPCN has a lot of land-focused provisions and requires not just the PSC to take steps, but also the Wisconsin DNR. In contrast, if it is to be applied outside the state, as Cub and Whig argue, the CPCN statute would be overly broad, requiring, again, any person to go and seek approval from the Public Service Commission. The CPCN itself is informative of the fact that person means more than Wisconsin Public Utility, because at various points it explains how certain provisions do or do not apply to public utilities, wholesale merchant plants, and when a manufacturer building its own generation is subject to the Act. Put simply, WPL believes that on its face the CPCN statute is clear. It applies solely within the state.
Could I ask a very simple question? Are there people or entities that construct power plants that aren't utilities?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, this court reviewed such a case back in 2000. There was responsible use of rural and agricultural land versus Public Service Commission, which pertained to the construction of, I believe it was construction of the Riverside Generating Facility. That was constructed by Calpine Corporation, an out-of-state corporation. I think they actually had a subsidiary based here. But they were seeking to build a large generating facility, had to get a CPCN, just entered the wholesale market, and they sold power to, among others, Wisconsin Power and Light, who then sold it to customers. So the short answer is yes, there are definitely companies who enter the wholesale market for in such a way. What Cub and Wig are arguing as to how to apply the CPCN statute outside the state is they're arguing to make it fit and to sever various provisions. But it's not just severance, it's a slicing and dicing of the statute, starting with to whom it applies. While they don't say it explicitly, there's an implicit argument that they've laid out that there should be a statute for Wisconsin Public Utilities under the CPCN, 491, and a statute for everyone else. But this is the sort of rewriting of a statute that is left to the legislatures and not to the courts, and also goes beyond what is intended by the legislature, and that is application to persons.
Can they apply .49 the same way to an out-of-state facility as they do to an in-state facility? Aren't there some provisions that have to be sliced and diced?
Your Honor, I see my time's up, but if I may answer?
Certainly.
I would contend that I am aware of no provision in .49, the CA statute, that would have to be sliced and diced. The one that maybe comes closest is Brownfields.
That's the one I'm talking about.
In consideration of Brownfields. Actually, the commission in this case, the commission can still consider Brownfields, and in this case did. It made specific findings that there were no Brownfields in Wisconsin suitable size to house a wind farm, either individually or contiguously.
Yeah, but the real issue is whether it's in Minnesota, isn't it? Not in Wisconsin. That's just...
That is correct. But I don't know that this commission couldn't consider Minnesota Brownfields.
Well, that's also what I'm trying to say. So you'd have to slice and dice that, too. There may only be one provision, but it's sliced and diced.
That might be correct, but this, because the CA statute is narrowly tailored to Wisconsin Public Utilities, and if that provision is ultimately deemed to need to go away, it is solely that one. It is not grabbing everyone and applying them to the CPCN statute.
I understand that.
Who applied for that facility in Howard County, Iowa, in 2008?
I apologize.
Who applied for the Howard County, Iowa facility in 2008?
I believe it was Wisconsin Public Service Corporation, but I would have to check that. It was not Wisconsin Power and Light Company.
So they're not here to answer any questions about it, are they? Okay.
Thank you.
There's nothing else. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Wilson, representing Wisconsin Electric Power Company, you're going to talk about the Commerce Clause.
Yes. May it please the Court, my name is Joe Wilson. I represent Wisconsin Electric Power Company. I agree with the arguments that my colleagues from the Commission and WPL have made. Wisconsin Electric has participated separately in this case to discuss the constitutional implications of the approach urged by WEEG and Cub. The Dormant Commerce Clause bars statutes that unreasonably burden interstate commerce. Statutes must be interpreted so as to avoid constitutional infirmities. There are two ways to interpret the CPCN statute. Interpreting it to apply to out-of-state projects implicates the Dormant Commerce Clause, while limiting it to in-state projects does not. Fortunately, there is a clearly constitutional path forward, and that is to apply the CA statute to in-state projects. The CPCN statute regulates even-handedly but implicates interstate commerce. For that sort of statute under the Dormant Commerce Clause, the court must weigh the legitimate local interests sought to be protected by the statute against the burdens the statute places on interstate commerce. Broadly speaking, the CPCN statute protects two sorts of interests. The interests that Cub and WEEG have focused on are the economic interests of Wisconsin ratepayers. But there is a second class of interest protected by the CPCN statute, and that has to do largely with the interests of neighbors of the project and the local environment. These considerations have absolutely nothing to do with the legitimate local interest of Wisconsin ratepayers in a case like this where the project is sited in another state. In this case, applying the CPCN statute would force the PSC to consider, for example, whether the proposed project would have undue adverse impacts on Minnesotans' health and welfare or on the aesthetic value of Minnesota's land and water.
Council, we concede Council, that in many cases where we have a bunch of criteria, a number of elements, we modify it or it's interpreted to mean that you have to consider all relevant
This statute, I believe, says that a CPCN cannot be issued unless the commission makes an affirmative finding as to each of the factors, and there's not a provision in the statute that
maybe the affirmative finding is that's up to Minnesota.
Well, Minnesota did consider this project and considered implications of local health and welfare, but
sure.
The statute says, as if it's applied to out-of-state projects, that this Wisconsin PSC has to consider those elements.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't say it can't defer to Minnesota.
It does not say that, Your Honor, correct.
Can I just ask a question? If this 491 affects the Dormant Commerce Clause, why applying .49 doesn't?
It's applying .49 does certainly implicate interstate commerce.
Okay.
But the burdens on interstate commerce are commensurate with the Wisconsin ratepayer benefits conferred on by application of the CA statute. And that's one of the factors to consider under the Pike v. Bruce Church case, is whether the legitimate state interests can be effectuated with lesser impacts on interstate commerce. And here we would argue that they certainly could. You get largely the same ratepayer protections by applying the CA statute without consideration of all of the factors that have absolutely nothing to do with the economic interests of Wisconsin ratepayers. And turning to the Pike v. Bruce Church.
Couldn't the PSC simply say, we're under 491, but we can't apply anything that would offend the Commerce Clause. So this one, we're not going to do.
If the question is whether the PSC or whether the statute could be severed such that it does not offend the Dormant Commerce Clause, I believe that there would be at least a couple of problems with that, some of which have been highlighted in the briefs. Once the PSC got through stripping out all of the provisions that we would contend offend the Dormant Commerce Clause, what you're left with is essentially little more than the protection that is already conferred by the CA statute. And one of the things that the courts look at when deciding whether a statute can be severed is whether the legislature would have intended what's left of the statute to stand on its own. And given the relatively minor marginal improvement in ratepayer protection offered by the CPCN statute as stripped down, and I see that my time has expired. Can I finish that?
You may finish your thought, Counsel.
Thank you. The relatively minor marginal protection of ratepayer interests that are left once the CPCN statute is whittled down to that which doesn't offend the Dormant Commerce Clause, there's a legitimate question as to whether the legislature would have ever enacted that statute. If there are no more questions.
Thank you
very
counsel.
Much.
Counsel, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Touch on a few of the points that were made by the commission and the utilities. First, Justice Robinson, I think this was covered, but it is the threshold decision of which to apply.
I got it now, but thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
I also think that it's worth noting that the importance of WPL filing an application for a CPCN is that they, like us, believed that the CPCN statute applied. The counsel for the commission also noted that it believes that a CPCN was automatically granted in this proceeding because the timelines in the CPCN statute expired. However, the commission simply can't have it both ways. They can't make a determination that the CPCN statute does not apply and then attempt to rely on the CPCN statute to say that a CPCN has been issued. various, both the commission and one of the utilities discussed the what Justice Abrahamson noticed was an absurdity, that what would happen if an out-of-state company attempted to build a facility in another state. I think in one of the briefs, the example was Utah proposes to build something in Texas. What they're ignoring, aside from the extremely rare ability or the fact that that's simply not going to occur, is that all of the criteria in the CPCN statute attaches to an application. The law specifically states in both 3D and 3E that the application that must, excuse me, that the criteria that the commission must find in order to approve or reject a project attaches to the application itself. So it's what's in front of the commission that they're taking a look at. And the likelihood of a Utah utility filing something in front of the Wisconsin Commission to construct something in Texas is just minuscule.
Even if it delivers a lot of energy to this state?
I'm sorry?
Even if it's capable of and planned to deliver energy to this state?
I think if a facility is to be constructed outside of the state and is not to be paid for by Wisconsin ratepayers, the likelihood of an entity bringing an application before the commission is nil.
And you don't think the statute requires that? That's more important.
That's right.
I think the statute requires if it's built out of the state, why do you need a application here? Is it because you're going to supply energy to this state? Because these companies are going to ask that rate makers pay for the construction?
I can't think of a reason. I can't think of a reason why any entity outside of the state that is not regulated by the state of Wisconsin would have any interest or any reason to seek an application from the state of Wisconsin to do something outside of Wisconsin. It is that Wisconsin connection that the commission and the utilities ignore in this proceeding. Applying the CPCN statute to a Wisconsin public utility whose projects are paid for by Wisconsin ratepayers impacts Wisconsin and Wisconsin only. All of the criteria in the CPCN statute that can be applied to Wisconsin is applied to Wisconsin. Environmental hardships can be examined from the perspective of those in Wisconsin. Sorry, environmental harm and individual hardships can be examined from the perspective of those in Wisconsin. This is not about the commission seeking to regulate people in other states. It's about the commission doing the legislature's will with respect to what needs to be regulated within this state. There's also been implications that the list of provisions that cannot be applied is somehow long. It's not. The vast majority of the provisions apply regardless of location or can be interpreted in a way to apply simply to those impacts in Wisconsin. It's only with respect to the overriding of local ordinances that has an impact outside of the state that is negative. The rest of the provisions apply to Wisconsin and for the benefit of Wisconsin.
What do you think of the dormant Commerce Clause, which I had hoped would stay dormant?
What I think is that there's a lot of talk about weighing the burden versus the benefits with no discussion of what the burden is. They have not identified any actual burden to interstate commerce, where there are clear benefits and clear interests to Wisconsin ratepayers of having these mandatory provisions apply to the protection of Wisconsin ratepayers' funds when used to build large construction projects. I see my time is up.
Any questions? No. Thank you very much. I want to thank all the council, Ms. Laura, Mr. Chasko, Mr. Greidlinger. Greidlinger, I'm going to get it. Third try. Mr. Wilson, for your arguments on a very important case and that affects people of the state as well as people outside the state and in a very complicated area of the law, which the court does not frequently deal with. So this concludes our hearing in 10AP2762, Wisconsin Industrial Energy Group versus Public Service Commission. The court is in recess until tomorrow, when it will again hear oral argument, and the court will meet in closed conference at, is it 3:15? We are in recess.